Today we're starting here, six lines down on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph. We're dealing with the question of the machloket that we saw yesterday, whether Ein L'Shechita Ela B'Sof, which is the view of Reish Lakish in the name of Levi Saba, versus Rabbi Yochanan's view, which is Yeshna L'Shechita Mitchila Va'ad Sof. So that's what the Gemara is addressing, trying to bring different proofs. We left off with the question from Parah Adumah, and then the rejection of that question. Now, Meitiv Rav Yidi Bavin, Ubemoed Lishmo Patur, Shalo Lishmo Chayav. So obviously we're picking up in the middle of a sentence over here, but we're speaking about the Korban HaPesach, a Korban HaPesach whereby on the 14th they got lost. And then they brought a separate or different Korban Pesach on the 14th, and now they have this leftover Korban HaPesach. And now Bimoed, on Cholom Moed Pesach, if you shech the Pesach Lishmo, which means l'shem ha-pesach, then you're going to be patur. Shalo lishmo, if you shecht it, shalo lishmo, then you're going to be chayav. The din that they're referring to is the two times in the Torah that it says, one time, lo tizbach al-chametz dam zivchi, and the other time where it says, lo tishchat al-chametz dam zivchi, which is the restriction against bringing a korban ha-pesach with chametz, when you have chametz in your possession. The fact that it was written twice in the Torah, the Gemara learns from that the restriction is not only against the Korban HaPesach, but any Zebach that you bring as a Korban while you're in possession of Chametz, during Zman Isur Chametz, that you're in violation. So Chol HaMoed obviously is a Zman Isur Chametz. The question is, do you have a kosher Korban in order to be in violation of bringing a Korban while being in possession of Chametz? So a Korban HaPesach that is brought Lishmo, Lishem Pesach, not on Erev Pesach, is a Korban Pasul. So if you bring it lishmo, l'shem Pesach, on Chol HaMoed, which is incorrect, then you're patur from violating lo tishchat ha-chametz dam zivchi because of the fact that you didn't get a kosher korban. Then you can't be in violation. Shelo lishmo, if you do it lo l'shem Pesach, which makes it into a shlamim, then you have a kosher korban, and then you are chayav for violating bringing a korban while you have chametz in your possession. So not only are you in violation of bayi matzeh because you have chametz in your possession, if you bring a korban while it's in your possession, you have an additional violation of lo tishchat ha-chametz dam zivchi. But that's only triggered if you bring a kosher korban. If you bring a korban that's not kosher, then that's not going to happen, and that's what's being described over here. Ve'havinan ba. What we have here is the girsa that Rashi put into the Gemara. Rashi altered the girsa, and we'll see what the original girsa was in a second. Ve'havinan ba, taima, de'shelo lishmo. The reason that you are chayav over here is because you did it shelo lishmo. Ha stamo. Had you not done anything, patur. Then you would have been patur. So the assumption, the diuk is that in order to remove the shem pesach from the korban, you have to actively remove it. You have to say shelo lishmo. You have to make it into a shlamim. Implying that if you did absolutely nothing, it would remain a pesach. And it would not be a kosher korban. Why am I patur? Why should you be patur in that case? Pesach, b'shar shemot hashana, shlamim hu. The Pesach, the remainder of the year, is classified as a Shlamim. By definition, it turns into a Shlamim. The Pesach itself is an enhanced Shlamim in general. So in the situation or the circumstance by which you have a Pesach that's no longer valid as a Pesach, it automatically turns into a Shlamim. So why do I need active removal of the Shema Pesach? Why isn't it just the outcome or the natural outcome of the situation that it should be a Shlamim? Shma Mina, from this you would conclude, Pesach b'sharimot hashana by akira. The Pesach, the remainder of the year, does require akira, and even though technically you should be turning into a shlamim, because that's the repurposing of the Pesach is into a shlamim, nevertheless you have to remove the shem Pesach from it. And then v'amar Rav Chiya bar Gamdo nizraka mipi chabura. It came out of our learning, our group of learning, v'amru, and this is what came out from our learning this sugya. Hachav mayaskinan. The situation here is, k'gon shayu balim t'mei meitim, d'nidachim the Pesach sheni. It's a case where on the 14th, the reason he didn't bring the Korban Pesach is not because it was lost, but because the owners were t'mei meitim. And that means they're pushed off the Pesach sheni. The stama lishmo koi. And there, it is stam lishmo, because he's going to utilize it on Pesach sheni. It's still useful to him as a Pesach. V'hai hu d'bayi akira. That is what requires akira. Ha'acher lo bayi akira. But in a stam case, you would not require akira. So in this way, we uphold that position that stam korban ha-pesach b'shari mot ha-shana is a shlamim. This is an unusual case because it happens to be that after he passed by Pesach Rishon, he still has a need for a Pesach because he has to bring a Korban Pesach and Pesach Sheni. And in that unusual circumstance, since it still has a Shem Pesach and a value to him as a Pesach, it will remain a Pesach unless you actively remove the Shem Pesach. So that's all in terms of background of the case. I noted for you that the Girsa is altered by Rashi. The problem that arises, this is what the Baalei Tosafot raised, is that the quote that we brought makes two statements. It says, Ubamoed lishmo patur, shalo lishmo chayav. And the Gemara, based on what Rashi is saying, is makes a diuk, that shalo lishmo is chayav, implying that stama, that you would be patur. That shalo lishmo makes it into a kosher korban. Had it been stama, it would have remained the korban pesach can be patur. But Tosafot asks is, why are you only being medayek out of the seifa of the statement, shalo lishmo chayav, and then coming to the conclusion that stama is patur? You could have just as easily said umoed lishmo patur. If you do it l'shem pesach, it's patur. That means that stama, it is chayav. So why is it that you're making the diok in one direction and not in the other direction? And therefore, they favor the girsa that's found in the Rabbeinu Gershom, and you can see the top Tosafot says kachi girsa takunches, which is what we have in our Gemara. Bekasha. You could be midayek out of the reisha, just the opposite of what you said out of the seifa. So then he says, uberov svarim yishanim, in the older svarim garsinan. This was the girsa in there. Vavinan ba lishmo amai patur. Why is it that by when you do it lishem a pesach, you are patur? Pesach v'sharim otoshana shlamim hu. That a pesach, the remainder of the year, is a shlamim. Even if you do it lishem pesach, why is that a disqualifying event? The fact that you did it l'shem Pesach, shlamina by akira. From there you would conclude that you would require akira, perushtim stama, lo by akira, imkein stam have shlamim. If by stam it doesn't require akira, then even when you bring it l'shem of Pesach, it would not need akira, and it would have been a shlamim automatically, and it would be kasher. So from that we would conclude that you must have to remove the shem of Pesach from the korban. So that's the alternate girsa, which says that the question doesn't derive from the fact that it's a diuk out of the sefer rather than the ratio, which Tosafot says, how did you know which side to make the diuk out of? But rather, it's driven by the fact that when you bring a Pesach the rest of the year, why do you have to do anything? Even if you bring a Lashem Pesach, it should be meaningless and should automatically become a Shlamim. What that shows you is that there must be something underlying this, that in a Stam or a generic case, default case, there is a Shema Pesach here and it needs Akira. And that's why you do it the Shem Pesach, you have a problem because it's not automatically converted into a Shlamim. And then the Gemara will continue the same way. The Ramban in defense of Rashi says that over here you're dealing with a Pesach. The Korban is a Pesach. And if you do it the Shem Pesach, it makes sense that it remains the Shem Pesach. Meaning that logically the diuk that you'd make would be out of the Seif and not the Reisha. It makes more sense to say the generic or default situation is it remains a Pesach, because that's what the Iker Dina Korban is. So the diuk you would make is out of the Seif and not the Reisha because of the natural state of the Korban. And that's what he says in defense of Rashi's view here as to what the Girsa is. Because otherwise, for the Baalei Tosafot, you have to make a jump, which is that even though you're speaking about a case of Lishmo, then that is somehow influenced by the case of the default case. And therefore, then he says, oh, then in a Stama case, it would also be you need Akira, because in the case where you say it is a Pesach, you are Patur. That shows you that you can bring a Pesach the rest of the year, even though it's designated as a Shlamim. And that means that you need Akira, and it's influenced by the default scenario where you need Akira. So that's obviously the leap of faith that you have to use in the Girsa that the Tosafot has. And the Rashi's Girsa has to ignore the diuk from one side of the statement and take up the diuk from the seifa rather than the reisha. All right, for now, that's all as a way of background to get to our question. Our question is, then if you say that shchita begins from the moment you start to cut and then all the way through, when you then have in mind to bring it as a Pesach, then you've made it pasul from the moment you start because you've already begun the avoda of shchita. And that avoda is done with the wrong machshava, and that's what causes the problem over here. Ella, yamart in le shchita lebasov. If you hold like Reish Lakish that there's only shchita at the end, came into shachit ba'purta idchele mi pesach. By definition, once you start doing the shchita, it's not going to be brought in Pesach. This animal is not going to be around next Pesach, or even by Pesach Sheni, in order for you to bring it, because you already started to cut. Idach ki kashachit shlamim kashachit. At that point, you've already automatically converted it into a shlamim, and then when you complete the shechita, it's already a shlamim, because you've already taken it out of the world of Pesach. It's no longer relevant to the world of Pesach because of the fact that you began to cut it, which obviously makes it that you're not going to be able to bring it on Pesach Sheni anymore. You're right. As regards to Pesach, it can't be used as a Pesach anymore because it's not going to make it to Pesach Sheni anymore. But midmei Pesach, when it comes to the value, you could monetize this animal and then use those monies to purchase an animal or Pesach for Pesach Sheni. So you're right. The cut makes it that this animal itself will no longer be a Pesach. But it doesn't mean that the monetized animal, the psulei mukdashim, couldn't be redeemed, and then those monies could be put towards buying a Pesach Sheni. So who says that the Shem Pesach has been taken off of it just because you began to do the Shechita? Wait a minute, don't you need, in order to value an item that you want to redeem from Hekdesh, it requires Hamada, standing it up, Haracha, and being assessed by the Kohanim to determine what the price is. So here, obviously, the problem is Hamada. If you're already shechting the animal, you can't do Hamada on the animal. Batnan, shechet bashnayim, orov shnayim. Here the Gemara brings the Mishnah that if you shecht in the animal two simanim, or the rove of two simanim, v'dayin hi mifarkeset, and it's still flopping around, harihi kechaya b'chol divareha. It has considered to be alive for all things, including hamada v'haracha. And so what we're learning from this Mishnah, which we'll see in a second, may not be a Mishnah, but we're learning from this is that Hamada Marocha doesn't mean that you literally are standing up in order to be assessed. Hamada Marocha means you need to be alive. As long as you're still alive or you still have the life force in you, then you're subject to assessment of value. So it's over here. When he begins the cut, in the beginning of the cut, you might have thought that that renders it not a Korban Pesach anymore, because you can no longer use it at a time when it'll be valuable for a Korban Pesach. And so therefore it's automatically shifted over to be a Shlamim. The answer is yes, that would have been true had it not been for the fact that you could actually monetize this, assess what the value is, redeem it, and then use the monies from that sale in order to purchase a Korban HaPesach, and then you'll use that for Pesach Sheni. The Shem Pesach hasn't left it entirely, and that way it doesn't convert into a Shlamim for the completion of the Shechita. Now Tosafot over here makes 2 points, the first of which is, a Mishnah Kein B'Shumakom. It says, the Gemara quotes here, V'atanan, we have a Mishnah, the Mishnah doesn't exist. He says there's no such Mishnah in Shas. It's Meduyak out of a Mishnah later on in the Masechta. It's not a Shochet Beimat Me'al Ovid Kochavim, Umifarkeset, Mitamat Tumat Ochlim, Avalo Tumat Neveila. From that Mishnah, it makes it clear that while the animal is still flopping around, it's still considered to be alive, and therefore there's no Tumat Neveila. And so what the Gemara is doing is taking that Mishnah according to the Tosafot, and then using that to indicate that if it's mifarkeset, it's still considered as if it's alive, it's not an avela. If that's the case, you can do hamoda ve'arocha. It's not exactly a direct line or so clear, but that's what the Gemara is using in the Ve'hatanan. There are other views. Rabbi Kiva Eger suggests that it comes out of a Mishnah in Mi'ilah, but that means that the Gemara here is understanding the Mishnah Mi'ilah differently than the Gemara in Mi'ilah, based on that Mishnah that seems to indicate, if you read it this way, that would be the source for this for Hatanan. Or you have to just say that the Gemara uses Hatanan very loosely over here. Doesn't mean literally a Mishnah. It means a Braita. And there is a Braita further on in our Masechta and Daf Kufchaf Aleph that seems to say exactly what's said here. So it's not a Tanan, but a Tanaic work. And it really should have said Vahatanya, a Braita rather than a Mishnah. So that's the first issue. The second issue that Tosafot brings up is that we have a problem, which is that you're not allowed to redeem kodoshim l'achilam l'klavim. You're not allowed to redeem kodoshim in order for dogs to eat it. You can't make dog meat out of psulei kodoshim. And here he says, mimonafshach idke gam midmei pesach. Mimonafshach, they shouldn't be valuable in terms of dmei pesach. Because if you shochet it a little bit, it can't be redeemed l'klavim. Ein podim kodoshim l'achilam l'kodoshim. You can't redeem it anymore. V'im l'achar pidjon gomer shchitato. Or let's say what happens is he redeems it, and then he finishes off the shechita, then he's shechting chulin yazara, because he's already redeemed it before, finishes off the shechita, v'asra b'chila. V'yesh lomar, d'miyad achar pidyon, yotzienu chutz, v'igmor sham shechitato. So he has to make the case even more complex, which is he began the shechita bifnim, he redeems it, whisks it out, and finishes the shechita outside the azara, in order that it's not chulin bazara. So that way, you don't have a problem of chulin bazara, if you redeemed it before it became a problem, and you do finish the shechita, so therefore you don't have to be poda the klavim, because now it can be eaten, because you had a kosher shechita that was done on chulin that was not in the azara, but rather outside the azara. Alright, so now we're leaving the din of ein el shechita basof versus shechita mitchila batzof, and moving on to a different issue, which is Amar Yehuda Marav. Hashochet b'shnaim u'shlosha mikomot. Person who shechs in two or three places, shechitato k'sheira. That shechita is fine. What it means to shecht in two or three places is subject to a makloket rishonim. The first opinion is Rashi. Rashi says over here, it means that he shechted along the windpipe, along the trachea, in two or three different places. And the Balei Tosafot, in challenging Rashi's position, say, what does that help you? If you are shechting along the way, and each one of those cuts is less than the rove of the trachea, then you haven't done a shechita. On the other hand, if any one of those cuts makes it to the rove, then why don't you have a shechita? So what exactly is the issue for Rashi? If you don't have rove, you don't have shechita. If you do have rove, you do have shechita. Why does it matter that you cut in multiple places? So the Balei Tosafot explained that for Rashi's explanation over here, the cutting has an impact on what's called a shechita mifurat, which is going to become a major topic over here, which means that you need a clear and open shechita. That means when you're cutting through the simanim, we need to see the area where you're shechting open up or expand away from the knife. So you have to have a clear and open cut that is being made. So if the person makes additional cuts along the trachea, and then when they come to the section where they're going to do the rove, at that point in time, it's the other cuts are going to put pressure towards the area where you're actually making the cut of the rove. That means if you cut above it on the trachea or below it on the trachea, that's going to stop that area from opening up. And because of that, you're not going to get a shechita miforat. You're not going to get an open shechita. And that's what Rashi is saying over here. That's the problem. So that the avagav deish rov makom ached, lovi shechita miforat. That's the way that Tosafot explains Rashi. Nechtach lamalo lamata lo mirvach. And you have cuts along the trachea, that puts pressure on the other sections of the trachea to stay tight because those areas have already opened up. Ubeshiltot d'Rav Achai Gon, the Tosafot brings the Shiltot, which is the view of the Balei Tosafot, and many of the Rishonim take up this position of the Shiltot. Mifresh, Bet Ol Gimel Mekomot, what does it mean, two or three places? Gon Shkaotan Mekomot, the Hekev Shel Siman, that they are around, they're on the same Siman, just around. In the circumference of the trachea, or even of the esophagus, you're cutting two or three times around it, so that they end up to a rove. So each one by itself is not a rove, but together they add up to a rove over here. Kagon shechatach saviv saviv kan ma'at v'tabat achat in one of the tracheal rings, ukiyotze bo beveshet, ben akol yesh rove. And then if you add them up, all of them add up to a rove. V'od perish shiltot, and he adds on top of that, shafidu chatach miuta kane l'mala, the tzad or, so then he adds in the additional thing, which is that even if you cut in the front of the trachea a small amount, and then you cut lower on the other side of the trachea a small amount, and even if they're not opposite each other, but together they add up to the fact that a rove of the trachea is cut, that's enough to make it kasher, according to this view of Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. So the Shiltot is significantly different than Rashi, but not only different, but also has a huge chiddush over here. That number one, that you can add up a bunch of cuts on a single tracheal ring, but the more important statement he makes is even if they're not on the same ring, and on their opposite sides of the trachea, if they add up to a rove, that's enough to be classified as shechita, according to the Shiltot. The Rabbeinu Chananel then brings a third interpretation. Rova kane the mala, rova veshet the mato. He just did a shechita that were not parallel, which is that he cut the kane in one location, and then he cut the veshet in another location. So they weren't in line. It wasn't going straight down where you cut straight through the kane and then into the veshet. You cut the kane, then you moved over and cut the veshet somewhere else. So that's good. Now the Balei Tosafot will point out, it's a nice explanation. The only problem is, that works for bet mikomot. It doesn't work for Gimel Mekomot, because there are only two simanim, there aren't three simanim. So that means bet makes sense. He doesn't have an explanation for gimel kamalot according to the Rabbeinu Chananel. Those are the three different views as to what it means to cut in two or three mikomot. And then given that, we have to then explain the remainder of the Gemara based on those different opinions. Kiamrita kameda Shmuel, when Rabbi Yehuda, who learned by Rav first and then moved over to learn with Shmuel after the passing of Rav, he used to stay over Memro from Rav. So he said over this Memro from Rav. Then Shmuel said, Amarli, b'inan shchita mifurat, veleka. That's the failure over here. There isn't a shchita mifurat, which is what you all noted. First of all, for Rashi, which is a little hard to understand, but Rashi, because of the pressure of the other two cuts, the cut that he did do, that's a proper cut, isn't opening properly. For the Shilta, then the Rabbeinu Chananel, it's clear what it means, Eina Shchita Mifurat. Because for the Shilta, if you're just cutting little cuts along the way, or even if you cut on one side and then the other side somewhere else, he's considering that a rove. It's clear that that trachea is not opening up. It's not splitting, even when you do it with three cuts on the same tracheal ring, because you don't have a full cut that's allowing it to open. And for the Rabbeinu Chananel, it means since you don't have the cut through the trachea and then the vesha being parallel, then the shchita is not opening up because the veshet is open much further down or up along the windpipe than actually where you cut the windpipe. And so then you don't have a clear opening or mifurat. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, so Rabbeinu shchita mifurat. And same is true by Reish Lakish. Damar Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Minayin shchita shehim mifurat. How do you know you have to have a shchita mifurat? Shenemar. Because the pasuk says, Chet shachut lishonam. Their tongues or their speech was like a sharp or pointed arrow. Mirma diber, they speak deceit. From here we learn that the chetz shachut, the way that you have to shecht, has to be similar to what an arrow does. And that, Oshavir Rashi explains, shchita dumya dechetz, sheinu chotek bebet mikomot. Doesn't cut in multiple places, only cuts in a single place. When an arrow goes through, it does damage in one location, it doesn't do multiple punctures or multiple holes or multiple cuts. It's a single cut when it goes through. So similarly, over here, we would require it be all a single cut, not multiple cuts in order to accomplish what we want. We'll see on the later on in today's daf that the Gemara interprets Chet Shechut a different way and brings a different interpretation to learn from that something about Shechita. So from that, we have two dissenting opinions to Rav's view in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, which is we have Reish Lakish and Shmuel both saying they don't think that this works. In this case, the Shechita Mifurat. So Meitiv Rabbi Elazar, Beto Chazim B'Sakin, Vishochatin. You have two people holding on to knives. Vishochatim, and they're doing shchita. Afilu echad namala, veechad melmata. One is above, one is below. Shchitato kishera. Then the shchita is kishera. Now, if you read this statement without what I just said, you would have just read it that two people are cutting with a single knife, because all it says over here is bisakin. But the way the Gemara at first says, kasavrinan, we think over here that shnayim ochzim beis sakinim. This is the view, quoting you, the Rabbeinu Gershom. Kol echad ve'echad sakino biyado. Each one of them has their own knife in their hand. Shochet echad akane klape arosh, zeo damala. Ve'echad shochet damata miota shkita sheshachat chaveiro bakane. So they're each shefting on the neck, one higher and one lower on the neck. So according to Rashi, and Tosafot explains this in the view of Rashi, it's not a case where each one of them cut the rove, because then it would be mifurat, mikomakom. If they were to do it exactly simultaneously and cut through the rove, then you would have a shkita mifurat. The problem is that one of them gets there first, so one of them cuts the rove, the other one only made a smaller cut. The smaller cut is causing the bigger cut or the proper cut not to allow to open. So then since it's already pasul, you can't have it when the second guy makes it to a rove that all of a sudden it becomes kasher. Since both of them have finished. According to Rashi's explanation, the question from this statement of Rabbi Elazar is how do you have two people shefting with two different knives? By definition, one of them is going to get to rove first. The other one has already made a cut. If that's the case, you have exactly a simulation of bet u'gimel mikomot. And over here it says shchitato k'shera. It's good. Just like Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, this sounds like it's totally fine. It's a question on the positions of Shmuel and Reish Lakish. How do they dissent or why do they disagree with that position? That's for the view of Rashi. According to the Shiltot and the Rabbeinu Chananel, as the Baal Yad Tosfot point out, he says the Peirush Rabbeinu Chananel v'Shiltot, It's not that any one of them has to cut a rov. According to both the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Shiltot, combined together, they can add up to a rov. That's the whole point of the Shiltot. You can make multiple cuts. If they add up to a rov, it works. And similarly for the Rabbeinu Chananel, if you have one cut of the trachea here and one cut of the esophagus here, then that works. So similarly over here, the question from the position of Rabbi Elazar is you have multiple cuts that are adding up to a rov, and it's working. It seems to be fine. But again, it's a dochak reading of the situation because it says bet ochazim bisakin. It should have said bisakinim if they really want it to be that way. But that's the havamino of the Gemara over here. And the Gemara says, amai, balak eshkita mefurat. Why is shkita kshira if you don't have a shkita mefurat? Samalei Rabbi Yirmiya, mishnatenu bisakin achad ushnei bnei adam. Rabbi Yirmiya reads the Mishnah like you would have assumed, which is that we're dealing with one sakin and two people holding one sakin. Now, what then does the mala ulamata mean when you have two people holding a single sakin? So the way the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it is, ve'amad echad lamala min atzavar, ve'echad lamata min atzavar. So the way the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it, it has to do with the positioning of the individuals. One of them is closer to the head, and one of them is closer to the chest. They're both holding the knife, but their bodies, or their positioning vis-a-vis the animal, is different. And that, you might have thought, would have caused a problem because their weight or their balance is in different directions. One of them is up towards the head and one of them is towards the chest, which is going to cause the knife to have pressure in whatever way that you might think would have caused some problem, as we're going to see in 1 second. That's one way to explain the malo lamato. The other way to explain the malo lamato is to say that one of them is holding the handle of the knife and one of them is holding the end of the knife. The malo lamato is not about the animal's neck, but rather it's a reference to the knife itself. And one of them holding the tip, the malo of the knife, and one's on the mata is holding the handle of the knife. That's another way to explain what the malo of the mata means in this case. But it's clear that the Gemara is changing what the malo of the mata means over here. It's no longer about where on the trachea you are. It either has to do with the position of the shochatim, or it has to do with the way you're holding the knife. Amalei Rabbi Ava, ihochi hainu detani alon. That's what we then say about this. Ein choshishin shemit tarfu zel zeh. That we won't cause a problem of trefa because you have two people involved. If you're talking about two sakinim and two people, then that makes sense. I would have thought, you're going to have diffusion of responsibility. And each one of them will say, the other guy got to the rove, the other guy finished the shkita. And because of that diffusion of responsibility, neither of them will complete the shkita. And that would be the whole point of the statement here of Rabbi Elazar, is to say we don't worry about that. We don't worry about diffusion of responsibility. We assume one of them did a correct shkita. And again, that would be supportive of Yehuda Merab's position. So, but Eliyamar b'sakin achad v'shnei b'nei adam, if you say it's one sakin and two people working with a single sakin, hayin choshishim shem yitarfu ze'al ze'. Why are you worried about them being mitarif? Shema yidrisu ze'al ze'al mibayle. It should say that they cause a problem of drisa. The biggest problem you have when two people are working with the same knife is not a trefa, but a problem that the pressure placed on the knife would be uneven. So instead of getting a cutting motion, you're getting a downward pressure motion that will cause drisa, which is alacha l'moshe misinai, that would undermine the shechita. When you're dealing with two separate people shechting, then you can understand why you might have a problem of trefa, which is both of them cut, but both of them don't make it to the rove. But when you're dealing with the two individuals cutting with the same knife, trefa is not your issue. Your bigger issue is drisa, because of the pull and push between them. And then the statement about what was unique about Rabbi Elazar's statement should be not that Shemi Yitarfu Azel Zeh, and that we're not choshish for that. It should be that we're not choshish for the darsa, that they actually put pressure on it. Amar Le Rabbi Avin, Tnei Ein Choshishim Shema Yidrisu Zel Zeh. Don't worry about it, just amend the statement that is modifying or qualifying this, or telling us what we learned from this, that we don't worry about whether they will be Doreis Echad Tesheni. The Meitiv Rabbi Avin. Shachat et veshet lamato, bet kaneh lamalo. If he shechted the veshet down below, and the kaneh up above. Oh, et veshet lamalo, or the veshet up atop, bet kaneh lamato, shchitato kshera. Then the shchita is kshera. This sounds like the Rabbeinu Chananel's type of explanation, which is, you have a situation in which you're cutting in two different locations. One of the cuts on the simanim is closer to the head, and one of the cuts of the simanim is closer to the chest. And so they're not a clear cut straight through. Over there we say shchitato is kshera. Amai. Va'aleka shchita mifurat. This is the same question that we asked before on Shmuel and on Reish Lakish. You don't have a clear cut shchita going through. It's not a shchita mifurat. So who motivla? Who mifarekla? So Rabbi Avin brought the question and he answered the question. He says v'shchita hasuya kukumus. It is a shchita that is done like a quill. A quill, at the tip of the quill, you cut the quill on an angle so that it has a sharp point so that you can actually turn the quill and write finer lines and thicker lines. Today we're not as familiar with it, but even in calligraphy, the same thing. The tip of the pen is done in such a way that you can turn it to make it thicker or thinner and have the ink come out or drop out. So the quill is the same way. The quill, if you cut it on an angle, that's what happens. So the same thing here. The idea of cutting through these at different points was that they were cut on an angle. So therefore, the trachea was cut higher up to the head, the esophagus was cut closer to the chest, but it's still shchita mifurat because it's a straight line through on an angle that was done like a kumus. So therefore, it's a fine shchita because it was done in an angle or in a matter of an angle and not two separate locations. And that's why it works over here. How Torah, v'ishchat b'shnayim u'shlosha mikomot. There was this shur that was shechted in two or three different places. Al Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta, shakal b'shufrei d'shufrei. He took from the best of the best. He said, this is great, this is a kosher animal, and he took from the best meat over here. First of all, because it's a machloket Rav and Shmuel, there probably weren't a lot of buyers for this animal, because there was a problem here as to whether it was kosher. He comes along and says, I can get for the same price of what I would have to pay for smaller pieces or not great pieces of the animal, I can buy the best stuff because nobody's touching this. It's a fake. That's one way to say it. Or it could be just an expression, which he's saying, I want to take me shufrei to shufrei, which means that this is great meat. This is kosher meat. What's the problem over here? But what he's clearly indicating is that he thinks the locha is like Rav. Because here it's being shechted in shtayim and shlosha mikomot. And he's saying that that's totally fine. Amarle Rabbi Zeira, the matanu rabbeinu mishnatenu b'shnei sakinim ubet b'nei adam. So Rabbi Zeira, a great Rashi reads it, is that this is a statement of fact. That now we can see from the way that Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta acted, that the proper way to explain the Mishnah that we brought before about bet ochzim b'sakim, v'shokatin afilu echad namala v'echad namato, that the correct explanation of that Mishnah is that it's talking about two people with two different knives. Because that was the proof to Rav's position. When we said it was two people with two knives, that was what actually said, bet b'shlosha mekomot shchitato kshera. The Gemara rejected it and said, no, it's two people with a single knife. And that's how they got out of the problem. What he's pointing out is that if Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta thinks this is a kosher shchita, he holds like Rav, then the explanation of the Mishnah would be the following. That two people are shechting with two separate knives, and it still is kosher. That's the way that Rashi reads it. The Balei Tosafot bring from the Bahag, that it was a question rather than an answer. He's saying, Amar le Rabbi Zeira, lid matanu. Not that we learned from, but rather you taught us. It's a question. He's challenging Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta and saying, didn't you teach us that Mishnatenu, the Girsa that he has, Mishnatenu b'sakin echad ubet b'nei adam, meaning that our Mishnah, the way you explained it before, was two people holding a single sakin, which means that you think that Rab's position is incorrect. So how all of a sudden are you eating an animal over here? Now, Tosafot says by the mere fact that he doesn't answer him or ignores him and still buys the meat shows you the chicken halacha, that the halacha is like Rav over here, meaning that either because he ate the meat and he says from this, the way Rashi reads it as a statement, we see that the explanation is like Rav of that Mishnah, or if you say it was a question but he still ate from the meat, means that he changed his mind and he no longer explained the Mishnah that way. And in both cases, he says that must be the halacha, mashma chicken halacha, that the halacha is like Rav. Because this is the way the Gemara ends about this situation, about this story, and it ends off with a story supporting Rav's position, seemingly indicating that the loch is like Rav. Alright, Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Hechlita Tasakin ben Siman leSiman, Upasko Psula. If you embedded the knife between the two Simanim, and then you cut the Siman, Psula, then you have a problem. Tachat Or, if you sunk the knife under the Or, but above the Simanim, that is Kshera. What is he teaching us? Tanina. That's a explicit Mishnah coming up on Daf Lamed Bet, which is Oshech Lita Tzakin Tachad Asheni. If he takes the knife and embeds it underneath the second Siman, Upasko, and then he cuts it, then it is a Pasul Shchita. It's no good, the Shchita. Yeshvav Omer, Nevela, Rabbi Akiva Omer Treifa. If you do such a thing, then Hachlada, according to Rabbi Yeshvav, makes it into Nevela. According to Rabbi Akiva, makes it into Treifa. First of all, the Bali Tosfo just make a side comment. He says that really this does not belong in our Gemara here whatsoever. This is all about Hachlada. And Chalada is discussed on the Mishnah in Daf Lamed Bet, and then the Gemara discusses the issue afterwards. This Gemara belongs over there, it doesn't belong over here. It's brought over here because of the continuation of the Gemara where it mentions Shkita Meforat and Shkita Sheinu Meforat. So topically it's connected to what we're discussing over here, but still the Chalada or the issues of Chalada are mentioned later on. So that's just a side comment of the Tosafot. Now we have a statement and the Gemara says, what did he add for us? He's telling us that Chalada is problematic. Chalada, we know already from a Mishnah. It's an explicit Mishnah. It's Alacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. What did he add over here? Imi Matnitin. So this is the answer as to what the Chiddush is. From the Mishnah, Havamina, Hani Mili Milamata Lamala. The Lo Kavid Kederach Shchita. Because if he goes from underneath and cuts against the normal grain of Shchita, that's what the problem is. Aval Milamala Lamata Ka'avid Kederach Shchita. But he's going from up to down, like the normal way of Shchita, Emer Shaper Dami, I would have thought it's okay. Kamash Malan, that's exactly what Rabbi Yehuda Amarav is teaching us over here, is that that's also problematic. So the two scenarios are actually different. Now first of all, here the Malo Lamato is different than the Malo Lamato before. The Malo Lamato before was closer to the head, closer to the chest. The Malo Lamato over here is given the view of the animal. Animals usually laying down face up when they do the Shechita. So Lamala means closer to the neck. Lamata means closer to the orif, the back of the neck or the back of the head. So that's the Mala Lamata. That's to start with. The way the Mishnah describes the problem and the way that Rashi describes what's happening over here is that first of all, you began the Shechita by cutting through the trachea. So from the front of the neck, you cut through the trachea. Then you pull the knife. Then you embed it underneath the veshet. And then you cut up towards the neck. So that's the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you first cut from the neck towards the back of the neck in the trachea, then you embedded the knife and cut from the back of the neck towards the front of the neck with the knife. And that's called Chalada. And the Hava Mina was that that was Chalada because of the fact that you cut the esophagus coming from the back of the neck to the front of the neck. So the problem was you didn't do it in the normal direction of the Shechita. And that's why it was Pasul. But if you were to embed the knife and cut the esophagus downward, then maybe that would be okay. So here, where you left the trachea intact, you went in, cut the veshet facing down from the front of the neck to the back, then you went back and cut the trachea from the front to the back, maybe over there, that wouldn't be a problem of hachlada. That's the chiddush of Yehuda Merav, that in that scenario, that if you put it in between, a pasko over here doesn't mean you split it, because then it would be a problem of drisa. Pasko means you shechted it. You went back and forth and shechted the siman over here. You shechted the esophagus, and then you went back up and shechted the trachea, but both of them in the normal direction of the shechita. So that, again, is problematic, and their addition, or what they're adding for us, is that even when you're going the direction of the shechita, it's still problematic. The problem's not just coming from the back forward, but even when you're going from the front to the back, there is a problem of chalada. And that's the chiddush of Yehuda Merav. So now, tachara or ksheira, under the skin, if he embeds a knife under the skin and then begins to do the shechita, beirav amrei tachara or eni yodeya. Rav said tachara or is ksheira. That's where Yehuda Merav brings a mesora that Rav said that if you go under the skin, that's not called hachlada. The reason it's not called chalada is because you haven't gone under anything that is related to shechita. Chalada is only when you go below an area that's subject to shechita. You embed the knife below that. On the other hand, if you put the knife under the skin and then you cut the simanim, you have never gone underneath anything or embedded yourself underneath anything that is subject to shechita. Bei Rav Amre, the Bei Midrash of Rav says, Takaror eni yodea. I don't know what it is. Now, what Bei Rav is always questionable. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says Bei Rav is Rav Huna, who was the Talmid Mufak of Rav and took over for him as the Rosh Hashiva and Surah afterwards, and they think that Bei Rav refers to Rav Huna. And that's interesting because we saw back on Daf Chav Zayin, we also saw a difference between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda in their Mesorah about Rav in a different area of Kashrut. And Rav Huna over there deferred to Rav Yehuda because he says Rav Yehuda had a Mesorah from Rav and I was making a statement or a logical argument. And then the retort to that was that, no, Rav Huna, if you give up your position here, your position is a derivative of your other position, which you heard from Rav, and you shouldn't back away from your position. But nevertheless, what you have over here, he says, Eni Yodea. Any odea could be any number of things. It could be any odea, means that I have a mesor from Rav that Rav didn't know, or I don't have any mesor from Rav, therefore any odea, I don't know. I really don't know what the halacha should be over here. So you have Rav Yehuda making a definitive statement in the name of Rav, and Bei Rav Huna saying any odea. Now, that any odea is not significant. In Lein Kein, you say that he said Rav said any odea, then it's very significant. Otherwise, you would think that we would follow the position of Rav Yehuda Rav, because he's giving you a definitive statement. Ibailahu, the Bei Rav, the Amrei Tachad or any odea, Tachad Matlit Mahu. According to Bei Rav, who says that you have to, that under the skin they're uncertain about, what is the story if you're underneath a handkerchief? So the way Rashi describes it is that there's a handkerchief tied around the neck. And then you go beneath that handkerchief and do the shechita. Or tachat semer misubach mahu. Or if the animal has wool that is tightly connected or intertwined over there, and then you shech below that wool. What's the outcome over there? The Gemara says, teiku. That is an unresolved issue. First of all, the way Rashi explained matlit was it's tied around. The way that the Bahag explains matlit is that it's actually glued or stuck onto the animal. And the question is, how much is this integral or part of the animal? Which is that you have or, which is clearly a goof of the animal. So maybe something that's the goof of the animal is classified as being achlada. You have a matlit now, which is not a part of the animal, but attached to the animal. Does that also create achlada? Meaning that is achlada only relevant when you're speaking about the animal's body? Or is achlada even when the knife is covered, even though it's not the animal's body? And then you have semer misubach, which again is a part of the animal, but not the goof of the animal. So the Rosh actually flips around the order of the questions and says that it's semer misubach first, and then matlit second, because semer misubach is more likely to be similar to the body of the animal than the matlit is, because the matlit is clearly a separate object. And so the question is, what happens when the knife is covered in this way? Or in essence, the Gemara's question is more to what fundamentally the problem of chalada is. Is the problem of chalada that the knife is covered? So that would mean, and in all these situations, if the knife is not visible, then you have a problem of chalada. Or is the problem of chalada that you're entering into the goof of the animal? That somehow you are digging into the goof of the animal, and that's what causes chalada. It doesn't matter that the knife is covered or the knife is not visible. Question is, are you somehow digging into or underneath something inside of the animal, and that's what's called chalada. That difference would then explain what the questions of the Gemara are. First of all, according to Rav Yehuda Merav, the only problem of chalada is when you get below the area of shechita. As long as you're above the area of shechita, there's no concept of chalada. For the Bei Rav, who say that even below the skin, there might be a problem of chalada, then you're starting to enter the world. Why do they think that? Do they think that because the knife is not visible? Or do they think that because you're inside the goof of the animal? You've somehow penetrated the goof of the animal. That will then influence what you think the answer is to the other two questions, which is when you're below the wool or below the matlit, what is the din? And the Gemara says, teiku, unresolved with this issue. Rashi says, v'chol teiku di isura l'chumra. Anytime you have a teiku, when you're dealing with isurim, then you have to go the chumra. And so going the chumra over here would say that this is a problematic shechita. This is considered to be chalada, and therefore you cannot eat the animal because of that. Now again, that's a strange outcome, given the balance between Bei Rav Huna and Amar Yehuda Merav. You have Rav Yehuda Merav, who's making a definitive statement, versus the statement of Bei Rav that's saying any odea. Any odea, why should that override the definitive statement of Yehuda Merav? Rashi over here says that it's a teiku l'chumra, but you could possibly argue on that point because you have the definitive statement of Yehuda Merav. So now the Gemara says, Boi Rav Papa. The Rav Papa's question is, Hechlid b'mi'ut simanim. He does achlada on a small amount, on a mi'ut of the simanim, mahu. What is the din? And the Gemara leaves it as a teiku. What does that mean that you do achlada b'mi'ut simanim? Is subject to the machloket rishonim over here, and that leads to actually huge ramifications la halacha. Rashi says, b'miut simanim, achar sheshaklat rubo behechsher. He went ahead and he shechted the animal, cut all the way through the kaneh, roba veshet, and then he went underneath the miut of the last miut of the veshet. And that's when he went in the didach lada. And the question is, mi aminen, ha'ishtamit shapir berov simanim. Do we say that he shechted rov simanim and he's done, because he's done everything that was incumbent upon him? And then the achlada is meaningless. Or do we say that last miut is still meaningful? One big shchita, v'it bei chalada. And now you have chalada. U'b'miut kama, pshitalan de nevela vadai. Rashi says over here, it's clear to me that if he did achlada on the first miut, that there's nothing to speak about over here. So Rashi makes two statements which are very important. He first of all says that the miut that we're speaking about is the last miut of the cut. And then you go underneath that miut, and then you cut the esophagus. That's the nature of the question over here. That's what a papa wants to know. Is that called achladar or not? And the question is the following. It's a chakira and rubo kukulo. It has major, again, ramifications here is the way you view the Gemara. Rubo kukulo, when I say rove, is considered to be as if you did the whole thing. Does that mean rubo kukulo, that is a halachic reality? Which means that the rove is like the kol, but if you do something else that indicates otherwise, then it will be problematic. It's not like the kol disappears. The kol is there, and if you do something wrong with it, then that's going to have impact over here. Or do we say rubo kukulo means literally kukulo? That's the physical reality now. Anything you do afterwards is meaningless at this point. And that's exactly what Rav Papa is asking over here. I've done what I need to do. There's a miut left. That miut left, what is the designation of that miut? Is that miut that's left rubo kukulo? It's as if it doesn't exist. And ever when I went below it and cut the esophagus, I didn't do anything wrong. I have to cut a rove of each siman, and I did that, and the miut is meaningless. Or, as Rashi says, do you see it as one big shechita? And therefore, when I went below the miut, rubo kukulo says, yes, rubo kukulo, as long as you don't do anything that undermines the rubo kukulo. Over here, when you pulled out and then went underneath it, you did something that then made the miut significant, and that miut significance now ruins the remainder of the shechita. Because rubo kukulo means, yes, we look at it as if it is kukulo, but it doesn't mean that it is literally kukulo, and therefore the psul still exists when you go below. That's how Rashi explains it. And then Rashi says the other statement, which is, b'miut kama. If you started to cut the trachea below the first miut, then that wouldn't work. I mean, if you did hachlada on the miut of the trachea, and then you cut two-thirds afterwards of the trachea, so you cut the rove of the trachea, but you went to Akhlada, and that miut is meaningless now, because it is a miut, so maybe there shouldn't be Akhlada there as well. Rashi says, that's considered to be a nevela vadai. That's not even a question, you didn't do shechita at all. And he says, therefore, it's a teiku, or the chumra. Whenever you have a teiku in Isur, it goes to chumra. Now, Rashi has a huge problem based on the Gemara back on Daf Yutet. In the Gemara back on Yutet, it seems to be exactly this scenario, and this scenario where the Gemara seems to come to the opposite conclusion of what Rashi is suggesting over here. Back there on Yutet it says, Gabi agrama nami de pirka kamo. Ben shachat shlish, vehigrim shlish, vishachat shlish. In a case where he shechs the first shlish, then goes out of the area of shchita for the second shlish, and then comes back into the area for the third shlish. Ben igrim shlish, vishachat shlish, vehigrim shlish. Or he was outside for a shlish, inside for a shlish, and outside for a shlish. Ben shachat shnei shlishay, vehigrim shlish. Or if he cuts two shlish, and then he does hagrama, goes out of there for the last shlish. Misfekalan. He says all of these are included in this same suffix. It's all about this issue of miut. What do you do when you have a miut? Is a miut significant? Especially in the case where you've cut two-thirds, and then you do hagrama on the last third. Is that impactful? It's exactly the question that we're asking over here. Rubo kukulo. When you did rove, are you done with the shechita, and it matters not what you do afterwards, and therefore the hagrama is meaningless? Or rubo kukulo, as long as you don't do something wrong with the last miut. Had you pulled out, you would have been done. But there, when you do hagrama, you undermine what the rubo kukulo was assigning. It was only a halachic reality. It wasn't the reality, and therefore you did something. And Rashi says, just like over here we have a suffix about the miut, so too over there we have a suffix about the miut, because dilma savralan kerabonan trofai, the mitrefe, maybe we hold like the rabbanon who think it's a trefa and mitrefe b'chochadam inehem, ve'abdin and the chumra. And therefore we're going to paskin the chumra in all of these cases. Rashi says those cases back there are no different than the cases over here. It's the same question. Miut. Is miut significant? Is miut not significant? Gemara here comes to a teiku. It doesn't know what to do with rubo kukulo. Does it mean literally kulo? Or is it halachic kulo and therefore you can undermine it? And since in this case it's the chumra, all of the cases back there, which are the same question, are all going to be the chumra. And therefore, abba miuta bacha ben kaneu ben veshet, in the last miut of the kane and veshet, and miuta kama the veshet, and the first miut of the veshet, mitrufa. That's going to make it into a treifa, because miut is significant based on this Gemara here, and miut is the chumra, and therefore in all these situations, I'm going to paskin that it's a treifa, that it's problematic in all these situations. So first of all, Rashi, first of all, gives his shita about what miut means, but his shita has then implications not only for this Gemara here, but also for all the cases we had earlier in the Masechta on Daf Yutet. The Baya Tosafot bring down Rashi's interpretation, and he says, Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Meir Omer, the Rivam, who is Rashi's grandson, disagrees. He says, Omer der agrama, paskinim et perakama k'Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. Back in agrama, in the first parak, we paskin like Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. and it's not influenced by our Gemara over here. The lo dami o lohocha. It's not like the case that we have here. The hot dam shalobi makom shchitahu. Says Rashi is comparing of the cases is incorrect. Because over there, if you were to shech the trachea and go through the rove, pull the knife out, and then go and cut the leg, it would have no impact. So similarly over here, when you slide out of the area which is called the makom ha-shchita, that's not a posel of the miyut. You didn't do anything to the miyut that is undermining the miyut. You cut somewhere else in the animal. Cutting somewhere else in the animal has no bearing on the rove that you cut over here. Same thing. If after you shechted the rove of the siman, you did akira of the siman, it makes no difference. Because that's not called shechita anymore. Rivam, first of all, argues on Rashi's comparing of the case here to the case there. Because over here you do an action with the miyut that is actually a puzzle action regarding the miyut itself. Over there, the miyut, you're sliding out of the makom ha-shchita. What you do is a meaningless action. It's not an action that undermines, it's an action that's meaningless. Over here, you're doing an action that has significance halachically, which is hachlada, and therefore the cases are different. So that's number one. Rabbeinu Tam then says, hiksha the perish akuntris. He challenges Rashi from a tosefta, and so now the Rivam's younger brother, the Rabbeinu Tam, also is rejecting his grandfather Rashi, umar faresh Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam comes up with a different explanation of our Gemara over here. The hocha bai b'miut kamo. It's in the first miut. Exactly where Rashi says it's in a veil automatically. He says that's the question over here. Ubaya the Rav Yehuda. And the question is under Rav Yehuda Merav. The machsher tachet haor. He said that when you go underneath the skin, it's not problematic. And so the question is too, if you slide the knife underneath the miut ha-siman in the beginning and then cut down, is that called hachlada? And here's the question. When you shech now, are you now b'makom shchita, and therefore it's problematic hachlada, because the miut that you left in the beginning of the kaneh is in the world of shchita, and therefore it's considered hachlada, or do we view the miut as if ain't no, because you shechted the robe now, the miut's not there, as if there is no hachlada over here. Just like when you went underneath the or, it wasn't problematic, so to here, when you go under the beginning of the siman in a miut, which isn't meaningful, maybe over there it's also not problematic. And that's the nature of the question. The question is, vis-a-vis Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, statement of Tachat Oris Ksheira, what is the din over here? And he says, Vafilu Amar Bei Rav, that they say, Enu Yodeya, Hayna Mishum Teshchita Lo Shaycha Be'or. They say they don't know because the Shchita is not Shaycha Be'or. About Siman, the Shaycha Be'i Shchita, the Siman where there is Shchita, Avilu Eche Yein Tzarech Lishkot, Ala Arov, Hamiyut Shal Asakin, Avilu Ke'an Nechtach, Lo Avi Chalada. Maybe they would even agree over here because there, the or isn't part of the shchita. Since it's not part of the shchita, maybe that's why it's called achlada. But now, when you go ahead and cut into the siman, and when you cut the rope of the siman, the miut's as if it's not there, maybe you didn't do achlada. Because it's as if it disappeared. By the or, it doesn't disappear just because you go below it. But the miut of siman, halakhically, disappears when you say rubo kukulo, and now it's as if it's not there. So he says the question can even be according to the Bei Rav, who have a doubt about Tachat Haor, they might agree over here that it's a good Shchita, and there is no Achlada over here. And that's what we leave here with a teiku, is this question about the first miut. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it, and he says all of this is b'miut kama, in the first miut, but he says b'miut batra pshita le de kasher. In the miut batra, it's clear to him that it is kasher. The latter miut, according to the Baal Tosafot, it's not even a question. The latter miut would be fine, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, because that's rubo kukulo, it's as if it doesn't exist. So here the Baal Yitzchak are taking a position. When you say rubo kukulo, it's as if the miut doesn't exist, you're done. Everything you do afterwards is meaningless. So now, he says, miu gam the perish Rabbeinu Tam, kashe mi tosefta. Rabbeinu Tam shita also has problems from the tosefta, and therefore he brings a third explanation, which is Rabbo Shaya. Roshaya mefarish, that hechlid b'miut simanim hainu l'achash shachat rov ha'echad. After you shechted the robe of one, bechlid takad miut shinishar. You went under the miut there, b'shachat siman sheni, and then you cut the second siman. Alright, so then the question is that miut that remains down below the first siman, is that significant? According to the Rabbeinu Hoshaya, when you cut through the trachea until the robe point, you pull the knife out, you stick it in, and then you cut the esophagus. That miut that you left at the end of the kaneh, what's the story with that miut? Does that have a din of achlada? So the way Rashi explained it is that he cut all the way through the kaneh, rova veshet, and then he went underneath the miut of the last miut of the veshet. And that's when he went in the didach lada. And the question is, has he completed shechita because he's done everything that was incumbent upon him? And then the achlada is meaningless. Or do we say that last miut is still meaningful? Again, that's the kum chakira and rubo kakula. The way that the Rabbeinu Hoshaya explains it is that he went through the robe of the kaneh, stopped at that miut, went under that miut, and then shechted the esophagus. And that's the nature of the question. That miut that you left in between, is that meaningful? Again, it's a similar question to Rashi, but it's at an earlier stage. The question is, when you left it in the kaneh and went underneath the esophagus, it's not where you've done a fully complete shechita, and now there's this little miut that's sitting at the way in. Here you haven't done a kosher shechita when you go into the achlada, because you did the rove of the kaneh. So you did one of the simanim in rove, and then you went underneath it and then cut through the rest. For Rashi, you're cutting all the way through, and then there's just a miut left at the end. That miut at the end, is that significant or not significant? So Rashi's question is the least of a chiddush, if you were to say that it was okay. Because he says you have to do a complete kosher shechita before achlada doesn't become a problem. For both the Rabbeinu Shaya and the Rabbeinu Tam, it's a much bigger chiddush if you say there's no achlada here. It means that either according to Rabbeinu Tam, you did achlada right in the beginning, and it's still considered to be a kosher shechita, or according to the way that the Rabbeinu Shaya learns, is that when you did that achlada in the middle between the two simanim, that's where the question arises. Alright, so that's the nature of the question. Obviously, the teiku and the chumrah will be different for each of these. And again, everybody seems, the Baal Tosfot in both Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Shaya's view, and the Rivam, who says that Rashi's comparison to the other case, think that if it was a miut at the end, it wouldn't be an issue at all. So they all think that Rubo Kukulo takes care of the problem, there's nothing to discuss, as long as you've done the full shkita. According to Rabbeinu Tam, that means, even if you're at, like, the Rabbeinu Shaya's case, or Rashi's case, it's clear to him that that's fine. According to the Rabbeinu Shaya, then Rashi's case to him is clear that that's not a problem because you've finished the whole shechita. In the case where you've done rov of one siman and not the other siman, there is where he has the question whether rubu kukulo makes it that you're done with that siman, or does it have to be rubu kukulo only when you deal with the entire shechita? So that's the nature of the safek according to the different opinions. And again, it leads to a machloka at Shulchan Aruch Ramah as well as to what the conclusion is here, whether we paskin the chumrah and what you're going the chumrah about. And again, that's all related to this question of Rubo Kukulo. How do you view Rubo Kukulo in all of these situations? All right, the next Mishnah. Hashochet bet rashim keechad. We already saw this, that this is referring to kodoshim. A person who shechs two heads at once. Shechitato ksheira. That is, bidyavad is ksheira. Because by kodoshim, we have the pasuk that indicates to us that we would prefer you didn't do it that way. Shnaim ochzim b'sakin v'shochadin. So this is the case we just brought on the Amud Aleph. Two people holding a sakin, the shochadin, afilu echad demalav, afilu echad demato, one above, one below, shechitato ksheira. So again, whether you explain this as two people with two knives, and the malo demato, do you explain it as their position, where the knives are on the neck, or where they're holding the knife, all of those go back to what we discussed in the Gemara earlier. Heitizet erosh bevat achat. If you took off the head in one shot, psula. It's clear here that the problem is drisa. That if you take it off in one shot, you have to use much more force to be able to take the head off in one shot. This is a machloket rishonim. The Ramban believes that taking it off in one shot means you've severed the head completely from the body, and that's what it means, hetiz. That's the classic meaning of the word hetiz. Hetiz means to sever the head completely. Although the Ran and the Rashba disagree and say that it's just a cut of the simanim is enough to be called hetiz. You don't have to actually take off the whole head in that case. And their proof is from the Gemara about the Kodashim before. By Olat, we also consider it to be Hetiz et Rosho. And over there, you only have to cut the two simanim. You didn't have to take the head off completely. So that's a machloket as what the meaning of Hetiz is over here. But Hetiz et Rosh v'atachat psula. And obviously for the Ramban, if you cut through the simanim without severing the head, that would not be hatazah, and then it wouldn't be a chashash of the risa, according to him, and it would be a shechita kishera. Hayshochet v'hetiz et Rosh v'atachat. If he happened to be shechting, he was going back and forth, but he got the head off in one shot. Again, the difference is in the Rishonim as to what that means. Im yesh b'sakin melot savar, if the knife has the length of the neck, ksheira. Now, length of the neck, as we'll see in the Gemara, means the neck plus another length of knife, which is as long as the neck. Then it was plausible that in one action, going in or coming out, in one direction, you could have cut the whole neck. That is a plausible explanation over here. Given that, you didn't necessarily do drisa, and that's why it's kosher. Hayshochet beitiz betroshim bebat achat. He was shechting, and there were two heads that he was shechting at once, simultaneously. And in his one movement, either forward or backwards, he ended up cutting off both heads. Im yesh b'sakin melot savar achad ksheira. As the Gemara will note, again, it's the knife is the length of both heads, plus an additional length of a neck. And in that way, you could, in one motion, possibly if the knife was extremely sharp, or was a very fine knife, you could have gone through both necks in one shot in a single direction. Yeah, All this Mishnah is stated, as I've been explaining to you, when you're going in a single motion, either forward or backwards. If you go back and forth, and that severs the head, even if the knife is the smallest amount, it is fine, because you did a back and forth motion. Then we don't care the size of the knife, because you didn't do drisa. You just went back and forth. Even if you use a scalpel, or it's also the thing that's used to describe a mila knife, that's also kshera. The Gemara will ask, well, if you told me kosher, then why do you need to tell me Ismail? So the Gemara will speak about that the tip of the Ismail has a split in it, and therefore there's a chashash that that might cause it to be a trefa when you're going back and forth. So there's something significant about an Ismail. So Gemara says, Minahane mile. How do we know you have to go back and forth? Amar Shmuel d'Amakra, Chetz Shachut Lishonam, Mirma Diber. So that's the same pasuk that we quoted before. And then, what is the chetz shachut over here? So here they give a definition differently. Ma chetz holechet b'mishicha, af shchita b'mishicha. Just like the chetz is shot with a pulling, which means that when you pull the string of the bow back, you go in a single motion to pull it back, that's what releases the arrow. So you only have to pull back, and then you let go, and it goes. So that mishicha, shin sotu shchita, your molich, or your mevi, that's enough to allow for the shchita to be not a drisa, and then it's a fine shchita. That's if you say it's referencing to the bow itself. You could say also that it's referencing to the arrow itself, which is that you pull the arrow back and you release it. That's also the idea that you can only have to go in one direction. If it suffices to do the shchita, that's enough. Tana debei Rabbi Shmuel. Vishachat. Ein vishachat ela umashach. The word shachat means to pull. V'cheinu omer, zahav shachut. It speaks about the zahav being shachut. Now, zahav shachut is very pure gold that is extremely soft, and it can be pulled to make strings of gold. So zahav shachut means something where you're pulling it, vomer, and it also says, chetz shachut lishonam mirma diber, the puzzle that we brought before. My vomer. So then why do you need both psukim? V'chitei mazav shachut shinit vekachutu. That means that it was spun like a string, not that it was pulled, not that it was a motion, but rather it was spun. Then, Tashma, I have another pasuk that proves that er chet shachut lishonam mirma diber. Now, the nature of the Gemara's question over here is somewhat strange, because Darsa is one of the halachot Moshe Mitzrayim, which means that you don't need a mekor in the pasuk. It's something that we don't find in pasukim. So then why is the Gemara over here asking, how do you know that you have to have a back and forth motion with regards to the shchita, and they're bringing pasukim? We have halachot Moshe Mitzrayim. So if you remember back on Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, Rashi over there said that drisa was an exception to the rule, and that the Gemara brings a pasuk for the drisa, and in Hochanami, drisa is learned out of the psukim, and not from Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. It's included in Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim because it's one of the psulei shchita, but not necessarily that all of them are Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim in reality. And drisa is that exception based on the sourcing that we bring over here. On the other hand, the Baal Tosafot over there and the Ramban over here say that the Gemara here is just an esmachta, and that Haladar really does come from Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. You could suggest that maybe over here the Gemara is looking for indications that it's okay to shecht an animal in a single direction, just with molich or mevi, similar to the way that a chetz works, rather than a back and forth motion, and that's what the Gemara is searching for in the psukim over here. Although the Tosefta does suggest that the chatchila wants you to do a back and forth motion, and not a just a single direction. So Rava hayabodikle gira. Rava was checking the arrow of Rabbi Yona bar Tachlifa. He checked it to make sure that it was a sharp enough arrow. V'shachat ba'ofa v'hadei deparach. He shechted an oaf while it was flying. He shot an oaf out of the sky in order to do the shechita. Amazing thing. First of all, we don't recommend you do this at home. This is not for anybody except expert archers. The point is that he checked the arrow and then it went out and did it. So Mar says, v'domavi l'chalado. How do you know that when he shechted it, the arrow, the sharpness of the point of the arrow, caught the simanim and cut them, rather than embedding itself in the middle of the neck and then cutting the siman internally and being a problem of chalada? Gemara says, chazinat gidei de mifrime. We saw that the word gadaf really means wings, but over here it means notza, the feathers. The mifrime, Rashi says, are krutot, they're cut. We see that the feathers by the neck were sliced. So that shows you that it was cut through the neck from the front and not through chalada. Because if it was chalada, it wouldn't have cut the feathers, it would have just cut the neck and left the feathers intact. The fact that the feathers are cut or split shows you that it came from the outside. Va'abai kisui. Doesn't a bird need kisui adam? If he's shooting it out of the air, how does he do kisui adam? Okay, fine. After he killed the bird comes down, the blood comes out, he put a kisui adam on wherever the blood that came out. Then in order to do a proper kisui adam, you have to prepare earth underneath, then earth that you place on top. Shenamar, and that's from the pasuk because it says v'chisau be'afar, that you cover it in dirt. Be'afar really means with dirt, but the Gemara is almost reading it v'chisau ba'afar, that you're putting it inside the dirt, that you have to put it in. Afar lo ne'amar, ela be'afar, ma'meisha shochet tzarich shiten afar lamata ba'afar lamalo. From the bet that's there, we learn that it's not enough to put it on top, it has to be put internally, inside the dirt, which means you need earth underneath and earth on top. So then, over here in this situation, you can put earth on top. How's he going to put the earth underneath? He doesn't know where the bird's going to land. He doesn't know where the blood's going to come out. So my answer is the mazmile the afar the kule pitko. You can be mazmin dirt in two ways, or earth in two ways. You can either go and hoe it up and loosen it up and make it into what's called afar tichuach, which means that's not solid ground, it's loose earth. If he went ahead and physically did that, that's a way to prepare it. Or if the field already had that, you can be mazmin bapeh, as Rashi says over here. You can declare, I'm making this all ready to capture the blood that comes from kisui adam, and that's fine. You don't have to physically bring the afar tichoch there. If the afar tichoch already exists, as long as you articulate that you want to use it for that purpose, that would suffice, and that would work over here, and that's what they did in order for this to work. But that way you see that he shechted with a arrow, and that shows you that in a singular direction, the arrow does or simulates what we would do with a shechita, and that means that you don't need to go back and forth to do a shechita. If you go either back or forth, either one of those directions is sufficient for a shechita. Now we learn out of the pasuk of a chet shachut, and here we have a literal example of a chet shachut, that an arrow did the shechita, and it was a kosher shechita. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph.